arraignment date. He has an arraignment date the next day for this, I guess, extortion charge that came out in the papers, you may remember. But in terms of my charge on the 3rd, it's not clear what they're going to do. But hopefully I should be getting a police report in the next few days. And by Thursday on the 6 to 8 show, I'll be able to report to you. I'm going to presume they're going to drop these charges, because it would be really quite a clown show to see this stuff hit the courts, and try to imagine them explaining to a jury how a single silent gesture is the basis for a charge of disrupting a public meeting. Offending a council member, sure, but you know, I'm afraid that Fitzmaurice has to get a thicker skin, or else maybe he's just going to sort of rewrite the Constitution to address his skin problems. I don't know. Apparently that's actually what already has been done, but I don't know if a jury is going to back that up. So, but what do you do when this happens to you at City Council? And that really is a question that I'm kind of wondering for the general citizenry. What's the proper answer? And when they attempt to repress a basic expression of a simple First Amendment right. And I think the answer, you know, obviously is going to lie in your own circumstances. Do you have the time to deal with an arrest? I mean, theoretically, you should be able to be cited and released. And that's what I wanted to do, but Sergeant Baker would have none of it and had me taken to jail and held for 5.5 hours. And they could presumably do the same to you. But when they do that, of course, that lengthens the potential legal penalties they face. And because of the lawsuit that I and these two good attorneys, Kate Wells and David Beauvais, filed in federal court on March 26th, there, I think, is more chance the City Council will pause before its next series of arrests and evictions and harassments. Actually, I think they'll harass, and I think they'll try to evict, but whether they will carry through against a person who is determined, because we did indeed see Thomas Levitt at the last City Council meeting giving the Nazi salute, nervously, apprehensively, lest he be arrested, but they didn't arrest him, and they didn't even say a word about it. And he was actually up there at the podium as he gave it. So it was quite visible and quite clear. And of course, in not responding to it, they were showing that there are some activists, it's okay, who do that, and others, it's not okay. And that, of course, is not okay at all. That whole process of deciding that you're allowing some people First Amendment rights, but others don't, under the same circumstances, have them. And it was a lose-lose situation for the council, and indeed, hopefully, one that will be upheld by the court, that it will be clear that the council has to completely throw out those decorum rules that say, you can't use impertinent or contemptuous or slanderous remarks. You know, if a council member is slandered, remember the public is slandered, the solution, the response, the remedy is, well, the remedy to bad speech, as one lawyer once told me, is more speech. If somebody criticizes you, you stand up and you respond to it. Or you let it fall of its own weight. Or you ridicule it. Or if you really must, you can take it to court and do a civil lawsuit for slander. That's what these council members have the option to do if they really feel they're being slandered, because they put themselves in positions of public trust. And their responsibility is to address and deal with and hear the public, even if they don't like what they heard. If they're too thin-skinned for that kind of stuff, then they should have stuck with other jobs. It's really pretty clear to me. And, you know, when they continually ignore long-standing grievances that homeless people have, real grievances, like the fact that they're being beaten and harassed, beaten by private citizens, harassed by police, and afraid to protect themselves at night in groups that where they could sleep together more safely for fear of being arrested. When they're turned into second-class citizens and the council, year after year, month after month, meeting after meeting, refuses to address and deal with these issues and correct these issues, and then attempts to arrest the people who come to the council to raise the issue, well, then we're in a situation here where by putting forward our own solutions strongly and powerfully and responding with all the legal and extra-legal tools we have, all the peaceful, non-violent, extra-legal tools we have, is really, I think, the way to change the situation. And that's what I was trying to do, and I'm going to continue to try to do, and I'm hoping we'll get people from different cities with different ideas at this Sleeping Band Summit, May 3rd and 4th, that will have their own thoughts on this and tell us their own strategies and maybe support us in Santa Cruz, and we'll see if we can actually begin a rigorous campaign, a civil rights campaign here in town. So you really have a choice. If they tell you to leave leave the city council chamber, and you don't leave, obviously, anybody can order a citizen's arrest of anybody else. But it's a telling thing that you're not engaging in criminal behavior by not leaving the city council. What you're engaging in is you're engaging in behavior that displeases a powerful official. And that's why I think it's important for people who are aware of city council's proclivity for abusing its power to come in groups of people, first of all, so they're supported, so they're witnesses, to come with tape recorders, so there is a record, maybe even video camcorders, so there's a video record, because community TV apparently is directed not to record these things, and Councilmember Kennedy makes sure that the council recesses so there's no official record of what happens, so you're going to have to keep your own record of what goes on. But it may be necessary to have these things in play if you're going to be assured your civil rights at city council. Until we get a federal judge to require the city council to act properly, and even then, who knows? You know, in southern towns in the south, federal judges' decisions were routinely ignored by segregationists. We don't know how the council is going to react. They may feel that they can just move right ahead with their prerogatives. People in positions of power can be very arrogant. It's hard to tell, but one hopes that if a federal judge tells them stop doing this, you don't have any rules of decorum other than advisory rules, unless somebody is actually disrupting a meeting, and then you can, you know, call for a law enforcement official. If, you know, the judge says that, I'm kind of hoping that the council will come down, particularly if will in fact respond to that, particularly if the decision also involves some kinds of damages against council members who have repeatedly and flagrantly violated the law, or violated the basic law of the land, which is the Constitution, which is the basic human rights that underpins our whole system, which has to do with the consent of the governed, and governing by the consent of the governed, and fulfilling the will of the governed, not imposing from above. And, you know, somebody called me during the break and said, during one of the tape sections where I was off air, and told me, aren't you unrealistic? Come on, Robert, you didn't expect this council to actually fulfill the promises it makes. They aren't real progressives. And of course not. I mean, no. One doesn't expect in the sense that one realizes that you're dealing with political hacks. You're dealing with people who will say one thing at election time and do something else. But I don't think that's something that we want to put up with. And I think that the idea that we sort of have to put up with it, that that's the only choice we have, is not a good lesson to learn. It's not good enough to say, oh, well, we could have expected they would do this. No. We could have expected they'd tell you to shut up and have you arrested. Mm-mm. We could have expected that, you know, they'd take all your civil liberties away and expect you to, you know, just be more cowed the next time you came into the chambers. Perhaps that's what is the current process. In fact, it is. But that doesn't mean we have to bend over for it or lie down for it. And of course, I'm not, and I hope you're not. That's what this show is about, and that's what I do at City Council and on the streets is about. Standing up for basic civil rights for myself and for other people. Again, it might be interesting to look over this last City Council meeting for a couple of reasons. At the May 12th meeting, I was, those of you know who want to go to the internet and look at www.santacruz.indymedia.org, and you'll see the actual tape of the arrest. I was arrested for a harmless gesture, threatened with having to leave city council chambers, finally taken out in handcuffs, and then held for 5.5 hours. And what did the council minutes actually say about that at the next meeting? The minutes are supposed to be an accurate record of what actually goes on at City Council. And I'm going to read you what the minutes actually said. Mayor Crone closed oral communications. This is the 7 p.m. session, May 12th. A woman approached the podium to speak, and Mayor Crone advised her that oral communications had been closed. During that time, Mike Tomasi began yelling from the audience. Mayor Crone requested that Mr. Tomasi leave the chambers. Mr. Tomasi voluntarily left the chambers. The woman remained at the podium. Mayor Crone requested that the woman step away from the microphone. The woman remained and stated she wanted to speak. Mayor Crone again requested that she please have a seat. The woman left the podium. Robert Norris made a Nazi salute, and Councilmember Fitzmaurice requested that Mr. Norris leave or be removed from the chambers, since he had been warned at previous council meetings about the specific gesture. Mayor Crone requested Mr. Norris please leave the chambers. Mr. Norris refused to leave. Mayor Crone stated that Mr. Norris was out of order and again requested Mr. Norris leave the chambers. Council recessed at 7:52 p.m. and reconvened at 8 p.m. Robert Norris remained in the chambers, and the police escorted him out at the request of Mayor Crone. That's the actual original minutes as I walked into the council meeting 2 weeks later, intending to correct those minutes. Now, the minutes needed correcting in a couple of ways. First of all, when you talk about the woman who didn't leave the mic, that was Susan Zeman, and Mayor Crone didn't request she please have a seat. He requested she please have a seat under threat of being evicted from the room. That's one thing. That's not in the minutes. I didn't add that to my amendment request. The amendment I requested was that two sentences be added to these minutes, and that they say, during the recess, Mr. Norris was handcuffed and arrested on a citizen's complaint from Mayor Christopher Crone. At the time of arrest, there were no specific charges, which were later determined to be the misdemeanor crime of disrupting a public assembly. Now, that seems pretty neutral to me, and it seems to me to be an accurate description of what happened. What did the council do when I requested this? Well, you're actually going to hear it on the tape, and so I won't go into it in detail, except to say that they cut the record back even further and concealed from the public what had happened. So let's hear a little of that, and what I'm going to play for you now is the afternoon session of May 26, 2 weeks after I was arrested, where I tried to correct the minutes of the meeting. And you're also going to hear, this takes place in a period of what is called the consent agenda. The consent agenda is this agenda where people can pull items off the agenda, otherwise they all get voted on just immediately in one big clump. Usually you have 3 minutes per item when an item is pulled off the agenda, and any council member or any member of the public can do that. I wanted to make sure I was going to be allowed that 3 minutes, so I wrote a letter to the mayor before this meeting and said, I want to be sure I'm going to have 3 minutes for the consent agenda item that I pull, or items, you know, 3 minutes per item. And he then said, sure, in his phone response to me. But when I got there, he did the following, and you get to hear this now.
Up on your screen right now, this address is for communicating with council during meetings only. The consent agenda, members of the audience are invited to fill out green cards to remove items on the consent for discussion. Items not removed by members of the public or council members will be approved in one motion, and members of the audience will be given the opportunity to speak on all other afternoon items after filling out the green card. Are there any statements of disqualification on today's agenda from council members? Anyone wish to disqualify themselves on any particular item? Seeing none, are there any additions or deletions? Right now I have, from the consent agenda, removed item 2, 3, 7, 10, 11, and 12. Would council members like to remove any other items? Mr. Kennedy.
You know, I would just like to clarify that item number 13, the depot part naming criteria, that the recommendation also includes adding that additional criteria number 5 about a regional park with sets within it. It's not stated in the recommendation, but I think it's part of the motion we would take.
I'm sorry, which item?
Number 13.
Number 13. You know, it says...
Item 13, adoption of depot park naming criteria.
Oh, right. There's an additional criteria, number 5. If that's part of the motion, I think it's fine the way it is.
And, I just had a question. Are those in priority order? No, okay. I would pull it if it were. Mr. Premack.
You asked for a conflict of interest on anything on our agenda, even including
yes, statements
the
of this
evening, evening agenda?
Do we usually do statements? Okay,
yes.
Go ahead.
Okay, well, item 21, I own property within the legal radius of that site, so I'll be recusing myself from that discussion.
Thank you. Would council member like to move the remaining agenda 1, 4, 5, 6, 8, 9, 13, and 14?
So moved.
Second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Hearing none. I would like to, just on item 6, I know it's just been moved, but I would like to compliment our Public Works Department. We're amending the refuse rate resolutions to change service fees today to eliminate a fee. I repeat, eliminate. That doesn't usually happen, but as far as people changing services, if you want to get a smaller can...
And I apologize for all this preliminary business, but it's the matter that's important for me anyway. The items I pulled are coming up right now.
Public Works expediency in moving this along and hearing the public, because we've heard from the public and we're addressing the need that was there. So why don't we start with item number 2. Member of the public, Mr. Norse.
Thank you, Mr.
Norse, could you speak on all these items, 2, 3, 10, and 12? And
I would actually prefer not
we'll
to do that.
We'll give you 5 minutes.
I would actually prefer to do it in the customary time rather than have some special process used to single me out, if you don't mind. Those items are normally called when individuals are, you know, when they're called for the in the usual order. If you're having some extraordinary reason for doing that, perhaps you could tell the community why that's the case.
Go ahead, Mr. Norse.
So you're not going to tell me why you've combined those
5
items?
Minutes.
Okay. Under protest, I continue. I regard this as a singling out of me so that I specifically am given time limitations that others are not.
At this point, it is the option of an individual speaking to simply ignore the mayor and take 3 minutes per item. And, of course, at this point, there may be interruptions by the mayor. And I could have done that, but instead I accepted under protest what he was doing and spoke on the items in the following manner.
That's the first matter of my concern is item 2, which is the minutes of the last city council meeting, and that has to do with the 7 p.m. session. I refer council members to pages, 456, actually page 457 is the key page. Specifically, here is the paragraph that I feel inaccurately reflects what happened. Robert Norse made a Nazi salute, and council member Fitzmaurice requested that Mr. Norse leave or be removed from the chambers. Since he has been warned at a previous council meetings about the specific gesture, Mayor Crone requested Mr. Norris please leave the chambers. Mr. Norris refused to leave. Mr. Crone stated that Mr. Norris was out of order and again requested he leave. Council recessed at 7:52, reconvened at 8 o'clock. Robert Norris remained in the chambers and the police escorted him out at the request of Mayor Crone. In fact, I was not in the chambers when the council resumed. That's shown by the tapes. And in fact, I was also arrested during the recess on citizens' complaint of Mayor Crone. And I would like that fact reflected in the minutes, since I think that is the accurate situation. So I would suggest during the recess, Mr. Norris was handcuffed and arrested on citizens' complaint by Mayor Crone. At the time of arrest, there were no specific charges, which were later determined to be misdemeanor crime of disrupting a public meeting. That's on that issue. On issue 3C, again, because... Go ahead, please.
Question for John. I'm just wondering why we would have something in the minutes that took place during recess. Is that what?
That's not. The minutes are reflecting of what takes place at a city council meeting, not when the meeting's in recess.
Right. So I request you correct this and add. I mean, in fact, in fairness, I think that's what happened and needs to be stated as such. 3C is a matter of a liability claim, and that is a claim by Jesus Sanabria, where he claims he was improperly arrested by city police due to his race and was wrongfully incarcerated. My concern is that claims made against the city often, in fact, almost invariably serve to have the police review board cut off all investigation. So I would like to make sure that the community knows which police officer is being complained about. That's not on the public record here, though it was on the record of the complaint. I suggest that be added to the complaint and would encourage a council member to bring up such a motion at a future meeting. Item 10, and again I'm being forced to speak rapidly on items which I feel is unfairly burdens me, is the Downtown Association's request to conduct sidewalk sales on various dates in May and June and October. I'm a great advocate of sidewalk sales, but I'm concerned that, again, we have a differential process. There is no way for example, poor people who are harassed for even displaying their jewelry, and in some cases, the city arrests them for displaying a newspaper and trying to sell it, which is completely legal, yet we have these special dispensations for merchants, somewhat similar to the process used to give the planter area in front of New Leaf Market to two merchants blocking off half the sidewalk in order to remove a bunch of young people who, of course, are still there. So I'm concerned that there not be unusual dispensations for merchants while ordinary poorer people who need, for example, one man was almost arrested for trying to sell his shoes downtown. You might call that inappropriate, but in fact, some people are in that condition, and I think we have to recognize it. Finally, we have item 12. And again, I'm not able to get a response from council after each of these items because you forced me to put all these items together inappropriately and in violation of the Brown Act, I believe. Item 12 is about water quality and system improvement study. And this is specifically a designation of about $500,000 to conduct a water quality and system improvement study, transferring $200,000 to this project. Now, I'm a lay person on this, as I'm sure many of you may be, even in terms of this actual special situation, this special studied area. But I think the community needs to know, when such a large amount of money is being appropriated, kind of what's going on. And when I see it passing on the consent agenda without any discussion, I think it's important that the community be given some kind of explanation, either from the staff or possibly from a knowledgeable council person who has an understanding of why suddenly $200,000 is being transferred here for, it looks like, a professional services agreement to conduct a study. That's a lot of money to conduct a study. I mean, it seems like to me. You know, we have folks in the audience who are looking for, you know, for living wages, and what we got here is a huge amount of money for a study. So, I mean, again, I could be completely up Poo-Poo Creek here, and I think that if someone can enlighten me and the public, and that's more important, it would be a great thing. So I would again request that you correct the minutes to read, during the recess, Mr. Norris was handcuffed and arrested on citizen's complaint by Mayor Crone. At the time of arrest, there were no specific charges, which were later determined to be the misdemeanor crime of disrupting an assembly. And I also request information on the other 3 points. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Norris. Any other members of the public like to speak on items 3C, 10, or 12? Bring it back to the council.
Move the items.
Would council members like to speak on?
I move the items.
On item number two, I'm sorry.
And now the council debate on the issue, which is interesting to listen to, but note that Fitzmaurice here is immediately rushing to get these things passed. And also the unusual process of having everyone speak on a mixture of items all together instead of allowing people to speak individually on items. This punishes people who are trying to speak on individual items in a number of ways. First, of course, it cuts down the time. You should have 3 minutes per item to speak on an item if you pulled it off the agenda. That's customary. Secondly, the council has an option to respond to that item. If there are suddenly 4 items together, it confuses and makes a response less clear and less directly relevant, and also less likely. Thirdly, if you are the individual that is the basis for this sudden clumping together or ghettoizing of your speech into, you're apparently not good enough to be able to speak on each item, but you are to be put off into a special section where you have to speak on all these items very rapidly together, it tends to disadvantage you in terms of the image it presents in front to the public. And therefore, it's discriminatory that way, too. We have an incoming call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Good afternoon, Robert.
Hey there. How you doing there, Bob?
I got a couple comments to make.
Okie doke. Did you want to hear the council debate on this first? Because they did discuss it. They discussed that there was a sort of a. But go ahead.
I think I'd like to keep my comments to the kind of general political theory about what motivates someone in power to take action. And it strikes me there's only a handful of things, 2 things that I can identify. One is the number of constituents
mm-hmm.
voice something as a concern.
Right.
I'll even use Mike Schmidt as an example. Mike Schmidt did not get vocal about rent control, at least from information that I've gotten from him, because he didn't feel that there was enough interest expressed to him as he was going door-to-door campaigning. The other possibility is issues that are organized under correct political channels. And in this town, that would be what? SCAN? That might be the People's Democratic Club.
You mean insider politics?
Yeah. Absolutely. Uh-huh. Outside of that, you're talking about wasting political capital. You're talking about risk.
Well, you know,
it has always struck me about you, Robert, and continues to. In fact, I'm amazed that you continue to persist in considering the establishment politicians here in Santa Cruz to be other than what they are.
Well, actually, I brought this up earlier in the show, Bob. As you may have noticed, I kind of mentioned that you had called off air, you know, and we had a little discussion about this. I don't like to spend my time, you know, psychoanalyzing the motivations of politicians. I mean, that really doesn't interest me a lot.
I think you would better serve yourself and the community by abstaining from city council for a brief period, 3 months.
Right.
Tactic.
Well, I think
this as tactic one really gets old quickly.
Well, I think there are a number of council members who agree with you, and probably I agree with you too for other reasons. But I don't really know if I would agree that you know it actually would have a positive effect. In fact, I think it would have the negative effect because see, council doesn't, you know, I think that there is a third way that council responds. They respond to pressure, I think, from the community when it is, you know, I should say, when it sees it has the power to act. And I think that sometimes you get that power by seeing individuals standing up for their rights.
Name me an example.
About when individuals stand up for their rights, Rosa Parks.
Which produced a bandwagon.
Yep.
Which finally got the political establishment to move.
Right.
Because if they didn't, they would have been displaced.
Right.
Okay.
You never know when the bandwagon's going to come, Bob. You know, there were Rosa Parkses before that who had no effect whatsoever. But
right.
Rosa suddenly did. And it wasn't because she had good political connections.
It was a very polite tactic that Rosa Parks applied to,
right.
Wasn't it?
And there's some other people who applied very impolite tactics and done some good things, like in 1775, you know, at Lexington
and
Concord.
Well, yeah, but if
or the Boston
civil rights
Tea Party.
As a current example, unless you're talking about overthrowing the government and taking some kind of a stand at Lighthouse Point or something.
Right. No, I'm not saying that, but I'm kind of, you know, I know that
I would like to discuss the tactics here.
Uh-huh, okay.
I think it's important, Robert. It's important that it be expressed.
Did you find me impolite in my conversation to city council? When you just heard me talking at city council. Was that impolite?
No, that was not.
I didn't think so, yeah.
All right. Uh-huh. But I think as a general tactic to defend and express rudeness on such a constant basis, I think is counterproductive.
But I'm not rude.
And here's the thing, too, is that if you were gone, if you removed yourself from the local political scene completely,
right.
There would be, in my opinion, a void to voice those issues at all.
Mm-hmm.
So I support you, Robert, but I do from a distance because I find it very difficult to defend the Sieg Heil.
Well, I was hoping you would wear a Nazi uniform at the last meeting.
Other than on grounds of pure freedom of speech, which I do support you on. But tactically, I don't see where it improved the clarity of the issue at all.
Well, what it improves is it encourages people to be able to stand up and say things and do things that, for example, they would have been afraid to do had I not been arrested. Thomas Levitt would not have made the speech he made on March 26th if I had not stood up and been willing to take a bust on May 12th or March 12th. You know, in other words, I think he was outraged at what he saw on the videotape, and he stood up and did, in essence. He wasn't making a Nazi salute in solidarity with the Nazis. He was saying, if we think you're fascists and we do this to demonstrate that to you, you got no business arresting us. And he did that, I think, because I did and because he saw the council's reaction.
On a freedom of speech level, of course you're correct.
Right, but
I said that the last time I called in.
Right, but it's not just freedom of speech.
On a tactical level, I think it's way off, Robert.
Well, I know you do.
It really is.
I know you do. And I understand the motivation here, too, because I think you feel that, you know, that this alienates more people than it, you know, draws to the civil rights struggle here. But I, on the other hand, I think that the other side that you're not really looking at is that it's not just one makes, you know, a fascist salute. It's the whole context in which it's done and the whole history. And I think that, that people understand, once they understand what the situation is, that when you know, someone like Bob LaMonica spends years trying to get a sleeping ban initiative together, when David Silva fasts for months and months, and you get this constant betrayal by the city council, where homeless people are dying outside in significant enough numbers to merit a memorial every year, then that is the pent-up anger which expresses itself, and some would say, and I would say, quite appropriately in terms of really rather mild, reviews.
I can appreciate the articulation, but I would accuse you, Robert, mm-hmm. of the audacity of the expectation to expect the sitting establishment in this town mm-hmm. to do other than what they're doing, I think is really quite impractical.
We must expect heaven, and or we will have hell. That's my concern.
There are routes, however, that one can exercise the system, and those are the initiative, the recall, and the referendum.
Right.
By the way, somebody asked on the early part of your show about a pedestrian mall initiative in the 90s.
Right.
That was me, by the way.
Yes, indeed.
Okay. And I remain fond of the initiative process because it does engage the system, even if you fail. Mm-hmm. You have the opportunity to leave a mark. If people want to look the other way, they can look the other way at everything. They can look the other way at Jews being burned in neighboring villages because they're afraid.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe because it doesn't involve them.
Mm-hmm.
I look at what we've got now, the culture of effrontery. Mm. The huge vehicles that people drive around that are essentially useless from a utilitarian mm-hmm. perspective.
Right.
The loudness and the rudeness. I think in many ways you're trying to defend rudeness at yuppie planter, as you call it.
Well, I'm with you on those big vehicles, but I think when we're talking about human beings, that's a little different. I mean, I think some people think human beings are rudely dressed, or
we need to.
You know,
I think we need to express as imperfectly as we're going to these issues about rudeness versus mm-hmm. community.
Right.
What's reasonable? What's not? People get uptight and they call for the cops. That's the problem, I think, Robert.
Well, I think that, you know, in a healthy society, you have lots of disagreements. And what you want to find is a way to work out those disagreements without giving one side inordinate power, particularly when another side is constantly repressed and oppressed. I'm thinking of poorer people.
I would also suggest that it's early enough, this is April 2002, that you consider running for city council.
Right.
Consider it.
Well, yeah.
If you were to do it in all sincerity,
right?
I would be motivated to probably contribute to your effort.
Well, you have to manage my campaign, Bob.
You would have engaged the system in a very, very legitimate way.
Well, yeah, but what happens if I give a Nazi salute from the podium? Would you disown me?
No, I might speak out about the tactics that I don't agree with, but I think it would be. I think the time has come for Robert North to run for city council.
Well, you know, Steve Argue ran for city council 2 years ago, and I thought...
I voted for Steve Argue, by the way.
He was very articulate and did a lot of, you know, he was homeless at the time, and he was, you know, struggling a lot with that issue. But my comment on that has been, shall I give it to you off the air, or is there more you want to say?
Well, no, I voted for Argue more and left last election.
Yeah, I know, and so did I. And I think
go ahead.
Well, the problem is...
Or do you want me to get off the air?
Well, I want to give other people a chance to call in. I wanted to finish up this tape as well, but and I'll comment on what you're saying off the air if you'd like.
All right, Robert.
Hey, thanks for calling in.
Have a good show.
Thank you.
See you later.
The problem, as I said, is the office deforms the person. Unless you have a really independent political movement behind you and a whole set of people who are willing to advise you on issues, you're likely to get essentially reshaped by the system. So I wouldn't be interested really in running for city council myself, but running from them is a lot of fun.
Hi there, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert. Bernard.
Hey, Bernard.
Call.
Long time no her. Not here. Go ahead.
Well, my friend Bob LaMonica, you know, has me wanting to dispute a little bit about what he just said. May I have a little time?
Go for it.
Thank you. On the first point, and I hope you're listening, Bob, and feel free to call back in and respond if you wish. You know, I don't always think I have the most perfect analysis, but this sure is drawing my ire. When you say, you know, to Robert, you know, go away for a while, that's insidious. Robert is a citizen, you know, of Santa Cruz. He has a right, you know, to participate in this political process. You know, the political process belongs to everybody, everybody. And Robert is one person of that everybody. I really want you to think about that. No matter what tactics Robert uses, that's his, you know, right, you know, under the city constitution. So I just want you to really think about what I'm saying.
Bernard, can I say something about that?
No, I want to go on to my second point, and then you can respond, Robert.
I hope I can remember. Go ahead.
Write it down.
All right.
You're good at that.
All right.
The second point is about expectations, you know, of the city council. We have a right, you know, to demand our political, you know, leaders, you know, do what we want. You know, we have to show them that we are the people. And it's irrelevant what kind of expectations we have. The idea is to organize, you know, the political process that you want. You know, and we're going to go for it. We may lose a million times, but we are going for it because that's what's, you know, guaranteed in the Constitution. It's irrelevant what the expectations are. It has nothing to do, you know, with organizing politics, Bob. Nothing whatsoever. If I had any expectations, I would not be political. I've never voted for a person that has won. Nor have I, my politics are not even being discussed in any political body, you know, that I'm aware of. But that doesn't keep me down.
You're here.
So anyway.
Well, so my response to that, Bernard, is that, you know, I think, you know, Bob sees himself as trying to deal with practical politics as they exist. He's struggled to recall when he was district attorney Art Danner on several occasions by the practical method of the actual recall. He's tried to put initiatives on the ballot around the sleeping ban, rent control. He's, you know, he believes in trying to do something which would have a practical and tangible effect. And I think I can appreciate that. But I think, and he says his suggestion to me is not that I don't have the right to make a Nazi salute or the right to participate in a political process, but rather that it is ineffective in terms of the objectives that he feels that we share. That, I think, is what his point is. My response to that is that I partially concede that what he says is probably true in a certain sense, but the question is of finding what is effective is really something that has no prefabricated answer and requires going to the community again and again. And I keep seeking to appeal to the conscience of the community on these issues and hoping that I'll see a chord. And at times I think I do, and I'm hoping that we can later this spring begin again another civil rights movement here that may be the one that does a little kind of Rosa Parks action in Santa Cruz and starts, you know, and signals the change where we start restoring civil rights to homeless people in terms of such obvious things as the right to sleep. And I appreciate your calling in. Is there more you want to say, Bernard?
Yes, I do. I just want to say, you know, well, you know, certainly Bob, you has a right to organize within what he considers the conventional wisdom. But the conventional wisdom has not broken the status quo, you know, and we are, you know, searching for it, and we're going to keep moving until we bust it.
Thank you,
Robert.
Thanks, Bernard.
Goodbye.
Again, kind of returning to the council meeting of May 26th, which the minutes were sanitized so that the mention of my arrest was removed from the record, and doesn't even appear there. You get to hear now that discussion from the city council.
Would council members like to move on, speak on 3C in response? Number 10. Number 12, I would like Mr. Coker to respond, if he could, or someone from the Water Department.
This was the item where I requested how come they're spending $200,000 for another study.
I didn't want you to think I was ducking you, but I think it's more appropriate that the operations manager, deputy director, speak on this.
Thank you. I didn't see him. Excuse me.
Terry Tompkins, Water Department. I'm not sure exactly what to answer, but just in general, this is a study that is fully funded out of Water Department funds. No general fund money is in it. Basically, it's an update of a study that was conducted back in 1990 through 93. This just addresses changes in water quality regulations, issues in the system unrelated to water quality regulations, such as increase in peak demands, decrease in availability of treatment capacity due to changes in regulations, a variety of issues like that. As the regulations change, we try to keep up with them. The treatment plant was constructed in 1960, so it's an old plant, and we've done a number of improvements over the last decades to try to keep up with the changing regulations and requirements for production capacity. So this is simply another investigation of the plant to identify means to address a certain number of specific problems, a means to assess the regulations that have come into place over the last 10 years, ones that are expected to come into place over the next 5 to 10 years, to take us out to 10 to 15 years into the future, so we know that the plant will have the capacity to meet these requirements, and that the system that delivers the water, the piping system, the reservoirs, will also be up to the challenges that are coming ahead.
Thank you very much.
Now, do you hear anywhere in that gobbledygook from the staff member any response to the question of why this costs $200,000 to $400,000? Because that was my question. And when Crone called for a member of the staff to address what was going on, and then you'll see he just votes for it straightforward without any further discussion, he obviously isn't concerned with really answering that question. And with explaining in simple terms to a person who doesn't understand why it costs $400,000 for a study. Are there unusual requirements to the study? Does it require many, many people working over a long period of time? Do they have to bring in an expert from Punjab? I don't know. But we don't hear any of that. Instead, we hear this blather that goes on and puts everyone to sleep from the staff. And of course, after the staff report, there's no public input. And that's something else I've been concerned about, that there should be public input after staff speaks, so that we can actually, or even dialogue with the staff. The public should be allowed to question the staff, to have interaction with the staff. You don't get any of that, and instead we get nonsense. And I'm going to respond briefly to this call, but I want to continue finishing this because we don't have too much time left. So, caller, we're going to give you a moment.
Hi there, you're on Free Radio Briefly.
Hi there, this is very brief. Do you read BC, the comic strip BC? I bet your readers do, listeners do.
You mean BC?
BC, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I want to share one. It's got two frames,
uh-huh.
And it's Wiley's Dictionary.
Mm-hmm.
And the word that's, that the little BC critter's looking up is the word rule, a noun.
Mm-hmm.
And Wiley's Dictionary says, for a definition, a regulation designed to prevent something from catching on.
Mm-hmm.
That's all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Wow. Let's hear what the rest of this council, essentially rubber stamping of the consent agenda, had to say.
The item's been moved. Is there a second? All four items. Mr. Fitzmaurice moved.
I need to abstain on number two, so... want to separate them so I guess on everything else number two since I wasn't here.
Excuse me.
I have a question for Mr. Barisoni. What do we do about abstentions?
That's fine. Ms. Riley was in Washington on city business at the time, so she can't vote yes or no on minutes because she can't really attest to their accuracy, so she can abstain.
Thank you. Mr. Kennedy.
Emily, I thought you were asking that question because things that happened during recess shouldn't be in the minutes. Was that? I thought that was the thrust of your question.
My earlier question to John did have to do with that. I was just...
No, I understand your abstention, but on the earlier point...
Right. I think the minutes should reflect what happened when we were in
session. Council was in session. But, Tim, I don't know, and you're making your motion, were you... Did you think there's a compelling reason to leave this account in the minutes?
And what Kennedy is speaking about is the sentence, Robert Norris remained in the chambers and the police escorted him out at the request of Mayor Crone. By my own testimony, that happened during the recess. And therefore, what Kennedy is trying to do is to eliminate that sentence. It's interesting, of course, that the recess was created by Councilmember Kennedy 2 weeks before, when he saw that I was refusing to leave the room, didn't want my arrest to be on camera or put into the public record, and so whispered to Mayor Crone, call a recess. Here he is backing up what he's done by not only proceeding to, you know, forward this business of calling a recess, but making sure that anything in the recess doesn't get out to the public in any official way.
I see no compelling reason to leave it in the minutes. I wasn't reading it.
I read it
as reconvened and then remained in the chamber. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. I mean, I think anything that happened during the recess, we should just delete from the minutes. Mr. Norris gets too much press already. Why would we give him more in our minutes? So I think we should delete the part during recess.